KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, if you go way back to Brooklyn South, you recognize my guest Titus Welliver as having the best hair on television. He's brought it to this new show he's doing. It's now in its fourth season on Amazon, the adaptation of the Michael Connelly books Bosch. It's a thrill to have you here, Titus. Thanks so much for doing this.
It's a thrill to be here. Thank you so
Again,
much for having
me. Again, a low threshold for thrills, but we'll get past all that. And what's been really interesting about seeing these books brought to the big screen, we were just talking about this a little bit, is about how Harry is a part of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just Bosch, but it's L.A. as much as anything else. And each season takes us into a specific part of the city, and we get to know the kind of the politics of that part of the city, the rules that the cops have to abide in that part of the city, which are different in every different part of the city, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. Well, and it's not a backdrop. I mean, you know, people always say, oh, it's the, you know, the city is really is a front and center character, just like Harry Bosch is. I mean, they sort of dance together, which is sort of, and he's, you know, unlike so many people, he's a native son. He's a true Angeleno.
And really tied to the history of the city in a very awful way.
Yes. And, you know, with all the blemishes. And so that's sort of the beauty of this story, is that with, you know, Hollywood and LA being kind of, you know, the city of dreams unrealized, that the facade and all the glitz and glamour that's so attractive and draws so many people here, that Harry works the dark part of that. And yet still it's an internal part of him and who he is and what drives him. And so it's sort of a bottomless pit of where you can go story-wise, because there's so much rich history. And Connelly has constructed his books so beautifully that we get to see Harry just sort of navigating all of those places, because he's not working on the West Side, right? He works Hollywood Homicide. So we get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly of L.A.
It's interesting, too, because like I was saying, he really has to attempt to adapt to the police procedures in every part of the city that he's in, and he bristles every single time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Harry is truly, I mean, the word old school is so sort of overused, but he really is a throwback. He's a bit of a dinosaur in this crazy contemporary world of policing. He's not a guy who's, you know, he's a knock on the door.
He listens to records. He listens to vinyl.
Yeah, he listens to vinyl. He listens to great music, too.
He does.
Listens to really, really good music, and his whole technique of policing and being a detective is that kind of dogged looking and looking and looking again and re-looking. And so, you know, of course, there are the accoutrement of forensics and all of these things that exist. But Harry's not – he's a real guy. He's a shoe leather detective. And I think that, you know, the metaphor of his feet being on the ground and his sleeves always rolled up is that this is a guy who's just dogged, right? And that's the way that you catch the bad guys, is it's just that nonstop, you know, quasi-obsessive, myopic way of policing.
I think what's so interesting about it, too, especially the way you play it, is that part of him gets a little more relaxed every season, but as soon as he goes into another institution,
yeah,
all that tension, all that armor of his comes back into it. And I wonder where you go for that, because it's a very specific point, almost like in the third or fourth episode of each season so far, that armature comes back up. Him getting a new partner and having to get past that, all these things.
Yeah, well, he's just – he knows what works and he knows what doesn't work, and he doesn't have time for bureaucracy and a lot of these sort of – new techniques and ideas that are supposed to sort of facilitate to a faster end result. Harry just doesn't trust those things.
I mean, because they don't work for him.
They don't work for him. It's just not the way that his mind works. And so, yeah, he ultimately bristles and bucks up against it. And it's just one of those – it's a style thing. And I think also what makes him so accessible to the audience as well is that he's a very he's a real guy. I mean, you know, people sort of describe him as being prickly, and I don't really consider him necessarily being prickly. I just think he's a guy who doesn't suffer fools. And he certainly doesn't subscribe to the societal norms that you and I do. He doesn't come into a room and say, who's going to like me here? He kind of comes in and says, this is me, warts and all, and he's going to you know, disrupt the flow of things. But it's all to the greater good. But he's flawed in that way. And so I think that makes him, you know, a constant sort of thorn in the side of people who have their criteria and a way of doing things.
Well, I thought, too, and this really plays into this season, he's a guy who may not like people, but he likes his cases.
Yes.
And falling in love with a case is very much a big part of this season.
Yeah, he gets very, very pulled into... You know, as he makes this decision to go undercover, he comes.
I'm talking about this season. He goes undercover. Yes.
Yeah, he comes into contact with this woman, and who's sustained terrible loss, which is at sort of the core of her addiction, and he sees this tormented and completely broken person who in her essence is really a good person, but has been completely destroyed by this tragedy, and I think he is drawn to that because of his own sense of loss, which has informed the adult that he has become. A lot of interesting new characters kind of coming in and out of Harry's universe this season.
But that happens so often, and the way you play that, whenever he meets a new person, he never speaks right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder when that hit you to do that, just to sort of make him this guy who's waiting to read somebody, because it happens. It's so consistent. I'm just watching all these to get ready for it. That's your beat for this guy, isn't it?
Yeah. I've always felt that Harry from the get-go is a character who is in a constant state of observation, and he takes measure of people, and oddly, and from a social standpoint, does not want to be seen.
Interesting.
And I always sort of try to, despite the fact that he doesn't wear a blazer and a tie, he's not the sort of standard fare that you see with homicide detectives or robbery
else
homicide.
Yeah, sure. His partner is always
his badge is all, you see his badge, you see his gun, you know who he is, his tattoos and everything is very exposed, and yet this is a guy who hangs back.
We're talking with a very jazzy actor, Titus Welliver. He's the star of Bosch on Amazon. I guess as we're talking about this too, I just find myself thinking so much about how Harry loves the cases. I mean, he really does. I mean, so whatever we're talking about, all these kind of social maybe liabilities that he has, when it comes to doing the work, he's completely invested in that. And in so many ways, that seems to be almost fit into the sort of the mechanics of being an actor, of sort of understanding the material and developing a skill set to go with that, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing with Harry is that everyone has their calling. I mean, we at some point in our lives, or some people don't, but we make a connection with something that makes sense to us, that preoccupies our thoughts when we're not thinking about, you know, our loved ones, etc. And that's what's in Harry's life. You know, that's his blood. It sort of courses through his veins. It's the idea of not being an avenging angel and certainly not seeking closure, because as Harry says, closure is a myth. But it's to be the advocate for the victim and for all that he can do is obtain justice. And it's all birthed out of the fact that his mother, who was a good and kind and loving woman, was a prostitute, was murdered. And because she was a prostitute, she was marginalized, you know, within society, and nobody cared. And she was just another dead hooker. And so, hence the credo, Harry's thing, everybody counts or nobody counts. And that's heady stuff. I mean, that's, you know, to have that kind of a moral compass and to have that obsession, for me, I relate to it as an actor and saying, I realized, fortunately, at a very early age that I didn't want to do anything else, despite the fact that I loved music and I played music and I paint, and I still paint. But what I really wanted to do, that was the thing that got me out of bed in the morning and that helped me close my eyes at night, was I wanted to act. And so there's a kind of funny intersection between Harry and I and understanding that kind of obsession, for lack of a better word.
When did you come to that realization that acting was your kind of your North Star?
Well, it was really after a year of art school, a sort of not very productive year of art school, and which I kind of came home It was a pretty bumpy year, and my father sort of said to me, hey, you know, what do you want to do with your life? I mean, and it was only, you know, my first year of art school. It wasn't like I had to have it all figured out.
But you could tell it wasn't the right fit for you? Could he see that?
Well, I think he, you know, what he said was, when you're not thinking about girls and drinking beer what is it that you think about? And I said, acting. And that was the first time that I'd ever said that out loud. And he said, it's not painting, is it? And
so got that. He could tell that's what.
Yeah. Yeah, he knew that. And one of the things he said to me is he said, you have the talent. You have the talent to be a painter. The question is not about whether you have the goods. The question is, are those goods what you want? And that was a huge moment, a big epiphany for me. And I never looked back. I mean, even in the, you know, as I call them the dog years, I guess they never really sort of ultimately end, right? Because there's always going to be something, a role or that, which you would seek to obtain that's not there within your grasp. And it allowed me 25 years after the fact to go back and to start to paint again because I put the paintbrush down.
It's so funny hearing you talk about this and thinking about the way you act. And one of the things I've often noticed about you and just watching you especially here is the way you use your hands. And when Harry's taking stuff in, his body kind of isn't moving. He's almost going back to being a soldier.
Yeah.
Waiting to hear what's going to be said. And then his body comes into play. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like him needing to get his hands on something in the same way that you need to get your hands in literally in the paint.
Yeah.
Is the way that you feel like you're alive.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harry, In the very beginning when we were doing the pilot, one of the things, and this goes back to what we spoke about before, about Harry wanting to kind of hang back and being a guy who's in a state of observation, something that I felt that was crucial to that was that he be very still. And that's a great challenge with the character of Harry because he's not necessarily an emotionally demonstrative guy. It's not that he has two emotions, silence and rage, but he's very contained, and I felt that he needed to be very still so that when he takes action, when he moves, it's necessary, but it's for a reason. And that's hard because as an actor, we're always trying to figure out what we want to do with our hands. And so Harry, at times you can see him in scenes where he's like a little boy with his hands in his pockets and he's about to burst and he's holding it in. And those moments, particularly when he's with Chief Irving, because they have this mutual respect. And I think in a way, a kind of affection for each other, but they frustrate the hell out of each other.
Well, he frustrates everybody. We're going to take a break. My guest who's not frustrating is Titus Welliver. He's in this new season of Bosch on Amazon. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest who's made me blush during the break is Titus Welliver. He's the star of Bosch on Amazon. And one of the things I'm going to say to you as we were talking about this is that the thing I think that people don't say about Harry, and I think the thing you found a way to connect to, is that he's passionate.
Yes.
I mean, he's a man of passions. His passions may not be conventional passions or may not be realized the way we expect them to see them realized, but he's a man of passions. And when they arise, be it when he hears that music or somebody you can actually talk to, and is almost always about the material at hand, then those passions come out and his entire body comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing about Harry is, and people often talk about, oh, well, he's a maverick and he's this, and I don't necessarily see him as that. His process sometimes can be circuitous, but he's a righteous guy. He has a really, really good moral compass. He would never plant evidence on someone, would never beat a confession. And of course, the planting of evidence comes into play in the season, which is profoundly offensive. And of course, that journey is going to be one that the audience is going to go along and with Harry. But there's a humanity to him. Yeah, he's very passionate. I mean, there's those moments where we find him in his house, in his nest, as I like to say, when he's just listening to music. And it's in those moments that I feel, and there's no dialogue, but we see him in that environment, in his environment. And even when he's working, that we see that connection.
It's funny, especially in talking to you now, but it's this thought that's kind of been bouncing around in my head for a while. I think of Harry as being like an artist. And, you know, a lot of artists don't know how to talk to people. They don't know what to do when they're not doing this thing that matters to them. Mm-hmm. And often what they do is about social constructs. So it's not like they've rejected the world or people at hand, but they know how to connect when it's something that is basically boiled in their passions.
Mm-hmm. No, and he has that. And you see him get kind of activated, you know, particularly when it's as it relates to music. Or he talks about to Maddie about the Grunion Run. It's these little, they're very subtle, but it's that kind of depth of nuance that Dan Pine and Eric Overmyer and Michael Connelly and the other writers bring to Harry. And that stuff might seem somewhat innocuous on the page, but when it's lifted on its feet and visualized, it resonates in those moments. They're little God, something my mother used to call a gotcha. It's like it scratches that itch, and particularly I think for the people who have invested so many hours of reading the books over the years, it's just little stuff like that that just, once again, it goes back to the thing. You know, you and I are sitting in some club and we're watching four cats just riffing, and all of a sudden it connects and you and I have a big smile on our face, and it's that smile. I call those moments a perfect smile, and they're a hell of a lot of fun to act, and particularly that's the gift that I have in those scenes that I get to do with Madison, because we're so very, very conscious of keeping it grounded. It's not Father Knows Best. It's two people kind of bouncing against each other, these atoms that are kind of going boing, boing, you know, back and forth, that are charged, supercharged with all this love and this care. And sometimes they get close together and they become polarized, because it's that thing of, you know, when you flip the magnets around and they don't want to stick, and yet all they want more than anything is to stick.
It's funny because we were just talking before we got started how in this season it's evident that, you know, he now has an adult in his life as his daughter, and he doesn't know how to talk to her as an adult. And so many of the chickens are coming home to roost in this season. I mean, it's the period after he cracked his mother's case, mm-hmm. and having to deal with the collateral damage of that, and the fact that, as he says, and you reminded us, there is no closure. I mean, just because this case has finally now been served justice doesn't mean that he's still not suffering from that loss.
Yeah.
And he's also lost the little girl in his house that he sort of could at least make fun of because she was a kid, but now a grown woman is in his home who he can't really talk to about his relationships because he doesn't want her to follow his example, but he also doesn't want her to know too much.
Yeah.
And he's also been reconnected with a colleague who we're reminded in vivid terms they fell in love with the case. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to watch, he's incredibly visually and physically vulnerable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's we actually have got a chance to see him like almost age in real time in this in this season the way that he hadn't before. It's almost like he was keeping time at base. There's a lot going on in this season, isn't there?
Well, and I think also the loss of Eleanor was such a substantial body blow for him. And you know, of course, we knew that Harry still loved her deeply. And to watch him go through that loss was devastating. And at the same time trying to help Maddie, but not really understanding how to translate that ability to process her grief and feeling very, and so he's in a way even more isolated than he was before. And we do find him. I mean, he's in a way he's more world weary in this season than we've seen him in a while. He seems to have aged, and loss does that to you. I mean, I remember, you know, after my late wife had passed away, a couple of people, and they meant no harm, but a couple of them said that to me, "You've aged." And I said, "Well, yeah." How can you not, you can't sustain that kind of loss and not have your soul be aged. And there is a great part of that at the center of this season, that he's still limping. And in typical fashion, because Harry's kind of like the plate spinners on the Ed Sullivan Show, he's, you know, it's never just one thing for Harry, you know.
It's a treatment. We're playing blues for Harry Bosch with my guest, the star of Bosch, Titus Welliver, which is on Amazon. I guess I want to ask you, too, because you were talking a little bit during the break about being itinerant and being gypsies. And part of the fun of doing what you do is you get to do all different kinds of things and play different kinds of people. Having now a history and making a commitment to this character, what's it like for you to actually kind of know where you're living now and to know what you're going to be doing? What's that like for you?
You know, Michael Connelly said to me when we were doing the pilot, "How long do you see yourself playing this character?" And my immediate and truthful answer was, "As long as they'll have me."
Really? So you even knew that early?
I knew that.
Did you know the books before you came on board?
No, I really didn't. I had read one many, many years before. But there's something there is a quality about this character that I couldn't make up a better character for myself. And I think that what it is that the reality of that character, his humanity, and the way that he's real. I hate to use that word, but I'm gonna, because he's very real. He's accessible. He's flawed. He's a quintessential anti-hero. And you root for Harry because he is vulnerable. He's broken. And I identify with that because I think, too, in many ways, I'm, you know, I've sustained a lot of personal tragedy in my life, and I think I identify with that. It's informed the adult that I've become. You know, you need to find a place. I once somebody asked me how to summarize Harry, and I said he's afraid of happiness. He doesn't trust it, and I understand that. That impulse to, I think it's eluded him, sort of true happiness, which is why he has difficulty in personal relationships with women. You know, it's the cliche of, I mean, everybody's got fear of abandonment, but his is so connected to the idea of a woman being there and then being taken away, which this kind of circles back to what we were talking about before, the loss of Eleanor, just when he was sort of able to arrive at the idea that they finally had this, there was an openness in their relationship. Because I don't think Harry's a guy who necessarily evolves. You know, he's still the same guy that he's always been. But he evolves within circumstances. And there was an acceptance and you know, right seconds before Eleanor was killed, we saw that resolve between the two of them of Harry kind of going, "I can live with this. I can live with, this is what our relationship is now. We're not going to get back together, but I like this. There's peace and there's kindness and there's harmony." And then boom, It's gone. It's gone in a nanosecond.
I mean, that and basically discovering the whole truth about his mother. I mean, having all these things, which is why I want to get a little bit about the opening, the first episode, where he's so exposed.
Yeah.
And trying to hang on to that essential part of himself, because there is part of himself that he's afraid to expose to the world. It's almost like it will crumble on contact with air.
Yeah.
And us seeing him that exposed with the guy who knew how to keep himself guarded until he got into the Batcave, and then he was fine.
Yeah.
What's it like for you to bring that out into broad daylight for this guy?
Oh, it's interesting because we've never really seen him.
He's never done that before. It's interesting. He's a different guy during daylight. I mean, when the sun's out, he knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see him out in broad daylight being just that open to experience really does something to us as viewers. And I wonder what that does to you as an actor to do that.
Well, that was the sort of the fun part of playing Harry, playing this other person, this Riley character, having to be submissive, being pushed around by these guys and having to try to be really small. And
they almost question him about it. And he has to explain that, no, this is who I am. I mean, because some of them can almost see, well, is this you in front of me?
Yeah. Well, and that was the interesting part as an actor was this is Harry playing another guy, but he still has to kind of keep to himself because he's not, you know, he's not an actor. He's not, you know, he can't go too far with his story. He's got to keep it simple because this whole decision to go undercover is done on the fast track so that it's a really simple story. He's a vet who's an opioid addict, but also the idea that he can't put himself out there too far, but he can't be too submissive. But we see him really naked. He's got no gun, got no badge, has no backup, has no way to call for backup. He's flying by the seat of his pants, and he's out there armed only with the skill set that we know he has as a former Special Forces operator. And of course, when it becomes dark, we do see that. We do see Harry click into that kind of, you know, primordial but very highly skilled and trained Special Forces operator. But it's still really, it's very, very dangerous because he's moving around and trying to collect intelligence. But it's sort of in this almost quasi, you know, road warrior post-apocalyptic landscape, in this weird kind of, you know, old decrepit buses and things, this odd little environment that he's infiltrating, but they're in the middle of nowhere. And to see him operating, but very unsure, because these guys that he's dealing with are profoundly dangerous. I mean, they're murderers. They're stone cold killers, and he's aware of that. And how much of that can, you know, how much backbone can he have? And there's that thing, and it plays in the trailer where she says, how do you do with compliance? And he says, you know, I'm famous for it, which of course is the one thing that will that become his, will he show too much backbone? Will that be his undoing? And so I think that will be, I don't want to say the fun part for the audience, but that will be the thing that will make people very uncomfortable, which I think, you know, even though I'm on the show, when I watch those scenes, it makes me uncomfortable because you sort of go, where is he going to go with this?
Yeah, that's where the vulnerability comes in. I'm sorry, Tyus, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man. This has been a long time dream, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be here, and thank you for having me.
My guest, who's way too kind, that's how good an actor he is Tyus Welliver. He's the star of Bosch on Amazon, a recording engineer here at NPR West, is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yores, edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. I'm going to go listen to some jazz. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes with The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.